Thank you. And we'll keep praying. So tonight is the last night in our Village 101 series. Next week, Rod is going to talk about healing. He's going to talk about James chapter 5, actually. So I'm really excited about hearing about that. But we're finishing up, and we're doing the last value of the discipline. So we've done about 14 weeks of covering what the village is. And the reason we did that is we just wanted, for those of us who have been around a while, to be like, okay, let's remember why we do what we do, what makes us unique, what our unique voice is as a community. And for those of us who are new, to kind of give you an introduction to the village. So we started out with most churches who follow Jesus and are very orthodox believe in the gospel, which is the victories of God. But at the village, we kind of break it down into three parts, right? We say that the gospel is the story of Jesus. It's the identity that comes from that. And then it's how do we live the kingdom out? How do we live the gospel out? So we talked about that. Then we talked about how culture in general, all cultures, have six ways of being. They eat together, they celebrate, they listen to one another, they bless, they rest. All cultures kind of have their unique ways of doing those things. But as a Christian community, it's important for us to try to approach those and ask, what does it look like for Jesus to shape those things? What does it look like when we eat together and put Jesus at the center of things? Or when we celebrate, how do we integrate Jesus into what we do and how we talk and how we speak? How do we redeem these aspects of culture? And then we've been covering the six values of the village. And those values, basically the reason we have values here is we're a value-driven church. Everything that we do, hey Anna, that light is like blinding me. No problem. It's okay. I appreciate it, but I just keep getting this flash in my eyes. Anyway, values. We look at everything we do through these six values. And so the values are community, accessibility, authenticity, creativity, and truth. And tonight we're going to talk about the disciplines or being disciplined. Okay? And every time we say that our value is the disciplines or being disciplined, we kind of all groan, or Rod makes a crack about how none of us want to be disciplined. But the reality is, outside of the truth being Jesus, outside of that value, the disciplines, I think, are being disciplined or living a disciplined life, having that as a value, is probably one of the most important values at the village. Now, when I imagine discipline, like since I'm a parent, I imagine disciplining my children, correcting their misdirection. But I also think about Hebrews where it says that God disciplines us because he loves us. But when I think about discipline in general, I don't like it. Like I have lots of stories of my mother disciplining me or my father disciplining me. And I don't always think it was fair because I was a kid. It's never fair to be disciplined. But as an adult, you know, it's hard to kind of negotiate what it's like to have external discipline, you know. And one of the reasons that is we as people don't like authority. Once you're an adult, you are the authority, right? You're in charge. And so to have anybody, God or any other person, trying to instruct us from the outside or guide us or create environments for us to learn things, it's not really, we're not excited about that. It's not like when we wake up in the morning and think, gosh, I hope God disciplines me today so I can be a better person. That's not what we're thinking, right? And part of that is because we like to be in charge and we don't want people or God to sort of hedge things in. But Hebrews does tell us that discipline comes from a loving God. But before we get into talking about the disciplines, I'll tell you tonight is actually going to be a very works-oriented message, meaning I'm going to talk about things that you have to do. And things you're going to have to make choices about. So before we get into that, I want to read you a little bit of the gospel so that you have that in your forefront as we talk about things that you have to do. So why don't we just read this together, if you can see it. I know it's a little small, but for those of you who have good eyes, let's read it together. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in sight, without blemish and free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, and do not move from the hope held out in the gospel, this is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant. Here's the key to this passage. You and I were at one point aliens to God because of our evil behavior, because of who we are. We are aliens, meaning we don't have any relationship. But because of what Jesus did on the cross, you and I stand before God without accusation. I think that's really important because we're going to talk about things you're not doing tonight. And we have two tendencies when we hear things we're not doing in our life. Either we feel really ashamed, or we feel like, no, I'm not listening to you. And kind of put our hand up and say, you know, talk to the hand. I don't care what you have to say. But what I want you to listen to tonight, I want you to hear me, hear God talking, hear Jesus talking. I want you to hear it from the point that you stand before God without any accusation. Like, there's no one who can accuse you. You are before God holy and unaccused and pure. Okay? Now, Paul says, if you continue. Now, when you hear this, what it sounds like is, well, that's only true if I continue doing the right things. But it's kind of really, the English kind of betrays what's being said here. What Paul is really saying is, you once lived in a reality where you were an alien and you had no relationship with God. You now have relationship with God. If you live with that hope and according to that truth, you will experience that. That's how it's going to be. You're going to be free. But if you go back and live the life of alien, then you're going to feel like an alien. You're going to feel disconnected from God, even though you still stand before Him unaccused. Okay, so the key is how you're connected to God or not. So here's the thing about disciplines. Disciplines are what connect us to relationship with God. If in my marriage or in my friendships, I'm just like, yeah, whatever, and I don't have any disciplined practice of loving my wife or my kids or the people around me, then we really don't have any connection or any friendship. So really, disciplines are about having relationship. Living a disciplined life is about having relationship. Now Solomon, the wisest king of the Hebrews, wrote the Proverbs, and this is what he says. He says, if you falter in a time of trouble, how small is your strength? Now I did some looking up of these words, and I want to just give you Eric's translation. Eric's translation is, when you have faced adversity, you give up because you are undisciplined. That's basically what it's saying, because basically the idea here is, the word trouble is adversity, and one of the definitions is a man caught between two wives. So when you face the anxiety of a man caught between two wives, you give up because you've allowed all these little enemies in your life when there wasn't adversity to sap your strength. Okay? And so because you're weak, you give up. Now, it's a total violation for pastors to give sports analogies, but I'm going to violate that and give you a sports analogy because it works. Basketball players, there are two kinds of basketball players in the NBA. There are the ones who work really hard and are ready to go at preseason, and then there are the ones who use preseason and half of the season to get in shape. What happens to those people is that they get injured more often, and they never live up to their potential, and they're often disappointed or disappointing to the community who is usually holding them up because they're very talented, usually really talented basketball players, usually are kind of lazy because they've been flying on their talent. That's kind of what this verse is talking about. Now, you might be saying, okay, Eric, what are you saying? You're saying that if we need to be disciplined or most of us will give up. Well, that's the thing. All of us here, me included, struggle in our life emotionally, physically, spiritually. There's a lot of troubling things going on in ourselves and in our world as to our condition. I talk to so many of us, and I look in the mirror and talk to myself, and what I find is that I just don't know what to do, or somehow I'm one of those people who just gives up a lot of times. Now, you might be saying, no, I'm not one of those people. You might be saying that to yourself. So I would like you to imagine that you are going into the doctor's office or the discipline doctor office. Now, you've taken off all your proverbial clothes and you have just your socks and your underwear and that horrible gown that they give you at the doctor office, right? That has that little side that you cannot get tied right, right? And the doctor comes in and he's interviewing you, and these are the questions that he's asking you to help you understand that you're pretty undisciplined. Number one, do you run away from difficulties? Well, you kind of stammer, and he says, oh, okay, you run away from difficulties. Do you avoid unpleasant situations? Is that a kind of a thing that you do in your life? And he checks it off before you can even answer. Do you keep from incompatible people? Meaning, are all of your friends like you? Remember that last week, Rod talked about in marriage, we come up with agreements a lot of times, and in friendships we do this, where if I don't talk to you about this, then you won't talk to me about this. And usually it's best to do it with people who are just like you, right? Because then it's so much easier to have those agreements with each other. So if you do that, if you only stick with people where those agreements are really easy, then you probably have some discipline issues. Is your motto to seek the easy way? Do you say, what's the easiest way to do this? This is very American. Give us the easiest way. We want the easiest way. Is that a strain in your life? Or last, do you quit a lot? Do you find yourself starting a lot of projects, doing a lot of things, but giving up, getting frustrated? If any of those resonate with you, then there probably is some discipline issues in your life. It's probably tonight might mean something to you. Now, here's the thing. If you're a follower of Jesus, you do hold on to this beautiful identity that you're his child and that you stand before God without accusation. But to enter into the kingdom of God and follow Jesus, Jesus says this, if you want to be his disciple, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. Jesus says to have relationship and intimacy with me, you have to deny yourself. You have to take up your cross. He uses an analogy that's pretty brutal for the people who are listening, because they all have an understanding of what Roman crosses are. Okay? So, to be a follower of Jesus, to be able to understand what it means to stand before God unaccused, you have to be someone who lives a disciplined life, who daily, not just once, but every day, takes up their cross, meaning puts themselves second when it comes to Jesus. So, the road that we're walking, though it gives great reward and is beautiful in the sense of having a relationship with God, requires something very deep inside of us. It requires us to take up our cross. So tonight, what I'd like to do is just talk about what it looks like to have discipline, self-disciplined character. And what I'd like you to do tonight is, just as I go through five categories, I just want you to think about, where is that? Where am I in this place in my life? What's going on in this place in my life? Does it need discipline? Does it need some work in my life? So the first one is our appetites. And when we talk about our appetites, we're going to try to think about them purely as physical appetites. And I'll give you three categories, though there are more categories. But number one, your food, the way you eat. Number two, your sexuality. And number three, your general health, your physical health. We're going to think of that as our appetites, like what we do with those three areas. Let me read what Paul says. In talking about self-discipline and talking about running a race, this is what he says. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave, so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. Paul says that our bodies can enslave us, that our whims can enslave us. So all I want you to do tonight is just think for a moment about your relationship with food, because food is a big part of our culture, right? We have tons and tons of shrines and temples to food, correct? We got McDonald's, we've got In-N-Out, we have Smashburger. We have the small temples, then we have the more advanced temples where you sit down, and there's kind of liturgy of how where you put your napkin and your forks, right? There's we have this whole way of worshiping food. So food is an important thing for you to think about. Number two, sexuality. Our culture is just inundated with sex. And yet we're sexual beings. But the question is, does your sexuality rule you? Or do you have it in control? And number three, your health in general. Your physical health. The way you exercise. Again, another thing that we worship in our culture, right? We have gyms everywhere. And most of us, this is the time right now when all those people are going to be on the phone calling people and trying to get them to get gym memberships, right? Because this is when gyms make their money, headed to New Year's, because you sign up, you work out for a month, and then you quit, but you have to keep paying. Okay? And what's really interesting, just to speak of athletes, we're a culture that worships athletes, and yet we're all fat, right? We worship other people, and I'm including myself in that, but we worship other people who just spend their life worshiping their bodies. And we want to be that way. So the question is, where are you in those areas? Where are you? The second thing is our emotions. Our emotions. Solomon says in Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Our emotions are a big part of who we are as humans. And a lot of times we're not in control of them, right? Because what happens is an event, something dramatic happens or something happy happens, whatever it is, we have an instant experience. Like we're mad, we're angry, we're sad, we're happy. Like all these chemicals fire and we feel things in our chest. And then we make a lot of choices about what we're going to do and believe about ourselves and how we react, and we think that we have no control over that. So it's just, we're so undisciplined around our emotions, most of us live with a knee-jerk reaction to our emotions. So if we feel good, then woohoo, we do. We're like going to just be free and happy. And if we feel bad, then we make a whole series of poor choices. But to be disciplined and to discipline yourself around your emotions is to understand how to respond to them and understand what kind of volition you have connected to them. So let me give you an example. This week, I had an encounter with somebody, not at this church, who I had hurt. I had not returned their phone call, and they were upset at me. So when I was talking to them, they said some really mean things to me that were kind of out of context to what I thought I had done. Now, when they said those things, immediately I felt anxiety, I felt anger, I felt all this stuff inside, and I wanted to just tell this person where they could go and what they could do and what I thought of them, right? But for once, I was slightly disciplined, and I made a choice not to do that, okay? Now, here's the thing. I had already done one thing. I had failed. I'd not returned the phone call. That person felt hurt, right? And out of that hurt, they were angry, and they made choices to lash out. So that led to some death. Now they lashed out at me, and I felt these bad emotions, and I could then have said a bunch of horrible things there and created more death. And you can see how with negative emotions, when we respond negatively, when we choose to make it about ourselves, it leads to death, not life. Because then we walk away feeling really horrible, and our relationship is broken, and we don't know what to do. But luckily, in that situation, I just said, let's talk about this later. We did, and there was some good healing in that relationship. Because I chose, in that one moment, for life and not death. And so this is really key. When it comes to disciplining yourself around your emotions, understand that a lot of times, when you feel like life is horrible, it has to do with the fact of the way you're choosing to deal with your experiences of life, your choices. And so if you're willing to, when you feel anxiety or anger or whatever it is, to just stop and say, okay, here's a moment where I can make a godly choice or a sinful choice. You're headed down the path of disciplining yourself around your emotions, and you'll actually feel more alive. You will feel more connected to God. Number three, your speech. James chapter 1, verse 26 says, those who consider themselves religious, and when you see religious, it should be self-disciplined. Those who consider themselves self-disciplined and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves, and their self-discipline is worthless. Their religion is worthless. Okay? Here's the thing about talking. You can be disciplined in every way else, but if you can't control your tongue, then you're not disciplined. And in our, a lot of times we say things and we don't intend to hurt people, but we hurt them anyway. Our intention isn't to hurt people, but we hurt them. So a lot of times your sin, your undiscipline, isn't around the idea that you are going out and hurting people on purpose by what you say. Your sin is that you don't care about people. You don't think about what you're saying. You're not aware of your environment. The Hebrews have this idea that words have power, that they're like a sword. And they believe that when a word is spoken, you lose control of it, and it goes out there, and it does the damage it's going to do, or the good it's going to do. That's why in the book of Hebrews, the writer says that the word of God is like a two-edged sword, right? It doesn't ever return void. Like, it goes out, and because it's God's word, it comes back with good impact. But our words, when unleashed intentionally or unintentionally, destroy people a lot of times. So what I would say, first off, in a culture where since 1999 we have produced more information and more words than were ever produced in all of history, like in written material and recorded voice, we are a culture of words and words and words. And we live, I'm going to do an informal survey here. How many of you even actually or have a Twitter account or follow Twitter at any way? All right, wow, more than I thought. But this is over. All right. How many, can somebody explain to me what Tumblr is?
A bunch of random stupid photos you see on the internet.
What's that? Okay. See, I'm not even up to date on all the words. But
it's a multimedia-rich blog.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. We entertain ourselves by arguing back and forth by 140 or less characters. Right? We've become this culture where we just don't think about what we write and what we say. And so what the writer of James is saying is part of being a disciplined person is someone who understands the power of what they say, intentionally or not intentionally. Because, you know, a lot of times we can say something that we didn't mean to hurt somebody, but it just did because of where they are in their life, but we didn't realize where they were in their life because we weren't thinking. So part of a disciplined person is very careful with their words. The question I would ask you is, how are you with your words? How are you with your words? What is God asking you to do with that and to discipline? Priorities. Let me read James chapter 1, starting in verse 1, or verse 2, I think. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. There's the whole theme of discipline. Outside and inside discipline, testing. When you look at the things, the adversities that happen in your life, they are all, big or small, indirectly, I would argue, or directly, from God to train you to be mature. Being disciplined is about maturity. But listen to what he says. If any of you lack wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. But when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like waves of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. The person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord, such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. Here's the thing. All of us, me included, spend a lot of time saying, I don't know what to do. And yet the Bible just told us that if you ask for wisdom, God will give you wisdom. And usually when you have wisdom, you know what to do. Okay? The reason that most of us get to so many places in our life and don't know what to do is because our priorities are wrong. Our priorities are very undisciplined. So the picture that's shown there is that we're tossed back and forth and God will not speak to us because we can't hear him anyway, because we're being tossed back and forth. So here are the two priorities that you have a choice between, yourself or God. So either you are building your life around you, or you're building your life around God. If you're undisciplined, you're building it around yourself. If you are working on discipline, you're attempting to build it around God. Let me give you an example. Since I'm a parent, parenting is an easy one. When I am working with my children and trying to parent them and teach them, if my priority is that they like me or that they behave well in public, which is a pastor's expectation of his children, so that everyone thinks I'm a great parent and I have things to say about parenting, right? If those are my goals, poor child, right? Because my priorities are so messed up that I'm never going to hear from God because I'm so obsessed with myself, I won't know what to do with my kids. And everything I do probably won't work. But what James is saying is if my priority is for my children to know and love Jesus and for me to display Jesus to them, if that's what I'm trying to do, then I am bringing my mind into a single focus around Jesus and he will give me wisdom. And I guarantee you, if your focus is for your children to know Jesus and for you to display Jesus, God will tell you what to do with your children. You will know what to do with your children. I promise you. 100%. And if you don't know what to do with your children and you are struggling with it, then there is a self-discipline issue. There's a priority issue going on. Is that a place you need to be working on? The last one, grace. Here's the thing. When you start trying to work on disciplining yourself and you get things down, usually what happens is you think, I'm doing pretty good at this. And when you think you're doing pretty good at things, you think you know how to tell everybody else how to do things. And you forget about grace. Or when you hear things like this, and this is the place you should start out with when you're disciplining yourself, is around grace, is when you hear, like, I need to work on my appetites and my emotions and all these things, you get overwhelmed and you begin to accuse yourself. And you're unwilling to offer yourself grace. Here's the thing about grace. Jesus died for you on the cross so that you could stand before God unaccused. The people around you stand unaccused. And so you and I are not called to point out to people and say, hey, this is how you need to improve. And if you don't, then I'm not going to associate with you, or I'm going to think badly of you. Instead of reminding people of God's grace and picking them up, we become people. We don't want to become people who point the finger. So we need to begin with grace in our discipline process. Now, I want to jump back to Proverbs 24:11. We talked about Proverbs 24:10, which is, if you give up when you face adversity, then you're pretty much an undisciplined person. Well, the following verse says, rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. Here's the thing. Some of you have your appetites disciplined, and you're really good at it. You're good at how you control the way you eat, and you know how to enjoy food, and you know how to not overeat. You exercise. Your sexuality is something you've got your hands on. You're good at it, but you suck at your emotions, right? You're just not doing good at that. Or your priorities are kind of messed up at times. All of us are in different places, and in those areas, if you could imagine yourself in that area, you're staggering towards death and towards the slaughter. I'm staggering towards that. So disciplines, the reason it's a value at the Village is it has to be done in community. You and I have to be willing to come alongside one another. And I love this. We need to rescue people. Rescuing is when they get the helicopters and they fly in and they climb down the ladders. And it's an active, like, emergency kind of thing. So when you look around here at this community and you look around at people, you just say, oh my goodness, I need to go help rescue that person. Now, don't leap on people after service and say, you need to deal with this, right? But remember grace in this process. But that's what we're here for, to learn to be disciplined together, because all of us are really good in different places and we can help each other not end up in the slaughter and not end up in death. Now, in closing, somebody, what time is it? 6:06, okay. In closing, I want to just read to you Romans chapter 12, because a lot of times it's like, okay, that's great, Eric. I know that I eat too much. I know I have emotional issues. I know that my priorities are screwed up. So what am I supposed to do about it? Well, first off, I would say, know that. It's good. You're in a good place. But Paul, in Romans chapter 12, 1 and 2, kind of gives us a little bit of a blueprint on how you can begin to approach these five categories and deal with them in your life in the context of community. So verse 1 of chapter 12 says this: therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercies. And I love, you know, when we sing this song, we say brothers and sisters. It's all of us. In view of God's mercies. God's mercy is Jesus on the cross. So in view of Jesus on the cross, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God, this is your spiritual act of worship. So in view of what God has done for you, as you look at these areas, the question you have to ask yourself is, how do I offer myself as a living sacrifice? Where is it that I actually need to sacrifice my own self in these areas? Where am I getting in the way? Right? Because that's part of worship, is just saying, God, where am I getting in the way? Actually analyzing yourself. Verse 2 says, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world. That's important. As you think about those five areas, the question you have to ask yourself is, what is the world's viewpoint on my appetites, on my emotions, on my priorities, on the idea of grace, on my speech? What does the world think about these? Where do I buy into the world? You need to have a way of articulating that. Okay? You need to be able to articulate what the world says about your appetites. And he goes on, he says, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. To renew your mind means you actually have to think. Okay? It's a process of thinking. And when you renew your mind, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, this is what the world's values is. This is what the world says. Now, what does Jesus say about it? You need to be able to articulate what Jesus says about your sexuality, about your appetite, about your physical health, about your emotions, about the way you talk. The way you do that is show up and listen to Eric talk about your discipline. Right? That's one way to do it. Another way is to sit down after service and talk to people about this. Actually be intentional about talking about the sermon. Go to Bible studies. Go to monastic communities. Be in community where you're in conversation about what Jesus says about these things. Okay? That's the process of renewing your mind. Okay? Now here's the interesting thing. When you enter into that process, it says, then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. You know, it's interesting that one of the questions often as Christians we ask is, what is God's will for my life? Right? And then we try to do that with, where should I go to college, who should I marry, all that good stuff. But what Paul is saying is, you want to know what God wants for you? Start this process of disciplining yourself and renewing your mind. Okay, know what the world says. Know what Jesus says about it. Be in a place where you can deal with that. Probably have like 2 minutes for questions. Does anybody have any thoughts, questions, want any clarification? Want to throw me out of the church? Anything like that? Yes, Bill.
First thing you mentioned about alien exposure. I think the one, you know, so
I didn't mention First Peter, but I understand what you're saying. Oh, right. I know what you're saying. Right. But we're not aliens to God. Yes. Yes. Well, I guess I'll answer two. I mean, in the sense that there is the basic disciplines that we need to spend time praying, reading our Bible, engaging in community. But I actually think that the five categories they gave you are places that you would discipline yourself, that you would begin the process. Yes. Yes. Any other? Yes, sir. I don't know. I haven't read any of Jeff Bridges' books. But, I mean, I know one of the books of Jeff Bridges, but that's it. So I wouldn't be able to answer your question. Sorry. any other questions? Yes. Let's pray, and then we can talk more about disciplines after for dinner. Dear God, thank you so much for loving us, giving us ways to engage in relationship with you. And I just ask as we spend time singing, eating, and talking that you would be amongst us. And I ask that in your name. Amen. A couple ways to respond tonight. One is through offering. If you're visiting with us, we're just happy to have you. You don't need to give anything. If you are a village belonger, then you can put what God calls you to put in there. I'll hand that to you, and if you would send that one off that way, that'd be awesome. The other way to respond tonight is right back there in the corner is the sinner's chair. It is basically for us the place where you get prayed for. It's a place where if you sit there, you are announcing that you need prayer, that you're wrestling with your sin or the sin of other people. If you sit there, someone will pray for you. And the other way to respond tonight is through communion. On the night that Christ was betrayed, he took the bread, and he broke it, and he said, "This is my body, broken for you. Take, eat, in remembrance of me." And at the end of that meal, he took the wine, and he held it up, and he said, "This is my blood shed for you, the blood of the new covenant. Take and drink." And then he headed off to die for us. So if you can come and say, "I stand with Jesus' broken body and his blood poured out for me," then please come up, take the bread, dip it in the juice, and let's just spend some time worshiping God together.